Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, beautiful humans. If a professional, polished, well-edited podcast is what you're after, then move right on.
If, however, you love unfiltered banter, unedited bloopers, authentic heart sharing, and a very generous dash of holistic health education, then you're in the right place.
Let's dive in, shall we?
Hello, friends. Welcome back to the Holistic Health Podcast. Amy, how are you feeling today?
Oh my gosh, I'm a little bit depleted, to be honest. A little on the tired side, but also happy, as per, generally very happy. How about you, darling?
Love that. Yeah, I'm good. I feel like, so at the time of recording this, we're actually still in 2023. However, at the time that this is landing in your ear holes, we're in 2024. So I'm sure by the time that you're actually listening to this, I'm feeling refreshed, fun, flirty, just all the good things. At now, like right now, we're literally like recording just before we go on a Christmas break. So I'm feeling pretty ready for a break. It's been absolutely incredible year and a very busy last week in clinic, but yeah, super, super, super like happy to be having a break and then coming back fresh in 2024, which is where you are all at listening. So staying on with, I guess, the theme of a few of our podcasts lately around fertility and preconception and all of that beautiful stuff, I really wanted to have a bit of a conversation around conception over 35. It seems to be that there is this, you know, there's a lot of fear, but also a lot of myths and misunderstandings in all different directions when it comes to conceiving over 35 and then probably again over 40, which we can, you know, some of this will be relevant absolutely to that. And then, you know, if we need to do another episode for a different age category, we absolutely can. But I feel like this comes up, at least for me, in clinical practice a lot. And I know that even just in circles of friendship, there can be a lot of confusion around just, fertility, age, you know, chances of conception, all that kind of stuff. So I feel like somewhere where I'd like to start is maybe just to explain a little bit of context around, you know, why there is this idea out there, which does have some science behind it, that you know, over 35 we are less, you know, less fertile, so to speak, is what the message tends to be. So where I thought I would begin the conversation is maybe even just sharing some statistics with everyone for those who feel like they enjoy a number. But I also always like to remind people whenever I'm sharing this with clients or sharing it publicly is that these are population-based statistics. These are not your individual statistics. And we have so much power to influence our individual circumstances and individual statistics when it comes to everything. But I absolutely believe it to be true in the space of fertility. So in your early 30s, when it comes to, first of all, like miscarriage rate, and again, these statistics vary depending on where exactly you look. So this is a ballpark figure, and this data comes from actually Southern California Center for Reproductive Medicine at the last time when I was looking at these. So in your early 30s, there's about a 20% miscarriage rate. And then when you're from about 35 to 38, it increases by about 5% to 25%. And then over 40, it increases again to about 33%. On the flip side of that, there's still a lot of percents in there where the potential to fall pregnant and hold that pregnancy full term is there. The other thing that statistic that I wanted to bring up is actually around like the percent of genetically normal eggs that we get based on age when it comes to looking at population-based studies, because this is going to be relevant to what we're going to share a little bit more on around the degree of influence that we have. So in your early 30s, the percent of genetically normal eggs is roughly around 43%. And then it does decline between 35 and 38 to about 35%. And then again, over 40 to about 10%. Again, these are generalized population figures, and arguably in populations who are not actively engaging in large amounts of preconception care, where we have the ability to influence influence egg quality. So when it comes to speaking around, you know, a decline in infertility as we get older, there are several different reasons for that. But one of the most important factors is just the reality of the fact that as we do move further into our fertile years, there is a decline, a normal FYI, normal, you know, decline in or like aging of our oocytes or of our eggs. And that's, you know, as I said, that is a normal process, and it's also a process that we absolutely can influence. There is also changes that can occur to our hormones and our hormone levels, depending on you as an individual and also your health, your genetics, all that kind of stuff, where, you know, we may see changes that also influence our fertility. And again, a large majority of that time we have an ability to influence that. But I really feel like this whole, you know, egg aging process is really important to factor in. So I guess on the note of like egg aging, egg quality, Ames, what do you like, you know, when you're working with women who are, you know, over 35 or even like over 40, or they're, you know, in their quote unquote later years, like mm-hmm. I guess, but they're just, mm-hmm. you know, they're not in their early 20s conceiving.
Mm-hmm.
How much, like, why do you think there is so much importance around egg quality?
Mm. So obviously the quality of the egg determines the quality of the genetic material passed on to the child, of which if you're only in control of 50%, right, your partner or sperm donor is the other half of the equation. But it does determine the health of your child and the likelihood of that pregnancy lasting. And look, there are women in their 20s who got poor egg quality. So egg quality isn't inherently a part of aging necessarily, you know, alcohol, drugs, poor lifestyle, stress, late nights, blue light, excess EMF. There is so much that can damage egg quality. However, there's no doubt about it that the older we get, the more free radical damage we've copped, the more life stresses we've endured, and probably the more margaritas we've drunk over the period of our life, not thinking about anyone in particular like myself. And what that means is the older you are, and I'm in the over 40, about to conceive category myself, you have got more of a life story and a life history to potentially mop up or shore up, as the case may be. And look, I do a lot in this space in, you know, late 30s, early 40s. And trust me, you can be more fertile in your 40s than you were in your 20s or 30s. But when it comes to optimizing your pregnancy and the health of your baby, there's so much you can do with egg quality. Now, it does need to be balanced if you are over 40 with timing. We have done an episode before where I talked about from the primordial follicle, the egg's journey is actually about 10 months if you want to sort of influence it from the ground up. But even if you're aiming to do that sort of in the last 120 days where it sort of comes out of that Graafian cycle and begins to mature, it is worth investing that time, because as soon as you improve egg quality and egg maturation, your fertility goes up. We know that better quality eggs make better quality embryos. Improved egg quality increases the chance of pregnancy. In fact, you're twice as likely to have a healthy baby when using interventions that improve egg quality than if you don't. Using interventions that improve egg quality can reduce miscarriage rates by up to 60%. It also lowers the rate of chromosomal abnormalities. And again, you can have a baby with chromosomal abnormalities in your 20s. I've seen that plenty of times. But of course, the more free radical damage you've endured over your life, the risk does go up. So actually, supporting egg quality helps to reduce that risk. And we know in IVF, and if you are over 40, you might well be considering this, or you might already be in it, but we know that interventions that improve egg quality mean you get more eggs retrieved, more get fertilized, embryo viability improves. There's a much higher proportion of quality embryos, and pregnancy rates are so much higher. So it's for your benefit, of course, but even more for your baby's benefit, and really dealing them a hand of cards that means they're going to be most set up for a lifetime of good health, that's mentally, physically, cognitively, you know, from a mitochondrial perspective and all of that. So I really think anyone looking to conceive, I'm really passionate about conscious conception and people actually really planning for this, because I know, Nat and I know what a difference that really makes to the child and the family. But if you are over 35, and especially if you're over 40, the time you invest in this would really make a huge difference. And I think that's sort of lends itself to your next point, Nat.
Yeah, exactly that, which is just not rushing the process where you can, you know, where you can, you know. And what I mean by that is, you know, understandably, if you are, for example, in your 40s, you might not want to spend, you know, 2 years doing preconception care, but it's more about, like, for the most part, I would say almost everyone who is over the age of 35 or even over the age of 40, and of course there may be minor, you know, exceptions to this rule, but you can all, like, afford to, from a health perspective and a biological perspective, in my experience, can afford 3 months to 4 months at a bare minimum to do adequate preconception. Because as much as, and we have spoken to this prior, as much as in your head, it can, and in your heart and in your body, it can feel like, oh no, I'm missing out. I'm missing opportunities. Every ovulation, every cycle I have, you know, I'm wasting time. It's really, really, really not, because the more time you put in, the more you are increasing the odds of A, a successful conception, and B, a conception that is going to stick. And then you save months, you know, by skipping, you know, like, by decreasing your chances of miscarriage, essentially. Because if you, and I've seen this happen before, where, you know, clients have come quite late to see me, and they've, you know, even just come as they've already just fallen pregnant, and they haven't done any preconception care because they were just in a rush. And very unfortunately, and this does not happen for everyone, but they have unfortunately gone through pregnancy loss. And then we've managed to have a beautiful conversation and commitment to a preconception journey, and then subsequently much better outcomes in future cycles. And, you know, that's not to put any guilt or shame on anyone who has rushed into pregnancy in the past or skipped preconception care for any reason. It's more to just highlight and give you permission and an opportunity to reframe what preconception care actually means and is, which is a beautiful investment, not a waste of time. And I think everything you said there is so important to remember around actually how much agency and influence you have over egg quality, which hugely influences the outcomes. And something I always like to highlight or share with people, because as much as sometimes this can be a hard thing to hear, I also think it's a really empowering thing to hear, which is if you are going down the path of assisted reproductive technologies like IVF, IVF and ART or assisted reproductive technologies have far less influence over egg quality than you do from a diet, lifestyle, supplementation, environmental perspective. So it's something really important to know that IVF is not a, like, you know, foolproof, absolute guaranteed backup plan. Neither is freezing your eggs, but what absolutely undoubtedly increases the effectiveness of you being able to, for example, use frozen eggs in the future if that's the journey that you're on, or have more have better outcomes with IVF if that's the journey you're on, is actually focusing on egg quality and preconception care holistically. And of course, that's, you know, as we've said, still relevant even if you're conceiving naturally. So yeah, I think the underlying message there is don't rush the process. And I also want to throw it back to you, Amy, to just highlight, underline, asterisk, the other point that you kind of really gently touched on, which is around it takes two. So please, mm-hmm. please elaborate.
Yeah. So as you said, you know, I understand deeply the pressure and the worry and the stress around time and wanting to just anxiously get it underway. And I've also seen, you know, the other side of the coin that you mentioned, Nat, where that hasn't ended well. But on the upside, and this is relevant to my next point, I've seen where it's been an absolute game changer, where I've had a family where, you know, six generations on both sides, you know, they're covered in eczema, and the mum and the dad took the time to do preconception work for 4 months. It was the first baby born in their family that had no eczema, just perfect skin. And, you know, you think about the cost, like I've got, you know, a lot of friends who've got young children or older children now, and you think about the cost and the stress of childhood illnesses and the impact that has on the family. And not that everything's preventable. Obviously, there's a certain amount of stuff that just comes along with, you know, children. But I really see the difference in families who are proactive with their preconception care and how much more easeful raising a family is in that case, because the children aren't battling these chronic illnesses and have strong immune systems. And so it's one or two colds a year and not one every couple of weeks. And that really does come down to both parents making that commitment, and for, you know, wherever the sperm is coming from, if that is under your control, as in it's, you know, you've got a partner or a sperm donor you're in a relationship with, that is also such a powerful place where you can absolutely change the outcome for the better of that human that you're trying to create. Now, sperm health is very sensitive to the environment. Like, we talk about how sensitive our hormones are to the environment. For men, it may not play out so much emotionally, but you can see it in their sperm. They are very sensitive to free radical damage. So any kind of toxicant, whether it's man-made or otherwise, is a threat. And of course, nutrition and antioxidant status are huge drivers of sperm quality. Now, there's two sort of main factors around sperm quality that we want to keep in mind. Number one, it's half the genetic material that your child's going to inherit. So you want it to be good quality DNA. But secondly, sperm health actually drives the health of the placenta. And so your ability to hold on to the baby and maintain that pregnancy is actually heavily influenced by the sperm quality of the sperm that fertilized that egg. And so, you know, we often think about miscarriage and pregnancy challenges as a female thing, but actually the health of the men involved is such a huge variable and such an easily influenced one. So please don't overlook that. And as Nat said, you know, if all you can put aside is 3 or 4 months, I like to call 4 months as the minimum. That is absolutely worth its weight in gold, and you are actively preparing and setting your baby up. Now, obviously, if you've got longer up your sleeve, you know, 10 months, a year, 2 years even, amazing. That, I mean, that's a dreamy position to be in. But I think, you know, with how crazy our lives are, often women sort of come out of a season of busyness and they're like, okay, now I'm ready. And then it's like, mm-hmm. hang on a minute. A year is too long, but you know, 3 or 4 months is very doable, and will just make such a huge difference. And part of that, of course, has to do with making sure you're producing good progesterone levels. And Nat, do you want to take us through that little subject?
Yes, absolutely. Beautiful progesterone. So, you know, when we're speaking about conception, you know, one of the things that actually is a non-negotiable needs to happen is you need to ovulate, and then, which by the way, isn't a guarantee every cycle. And you know, when you ovulate, that is how you actually produce progesterone, and progesterone is essentially responsible for, you know, maintaining that pregnancy. And so if you aren't making enough progesterone, then it's going to be one, you know, definite way where there will be a negative influence or a negative impact on your fertility, because we really need enough there, not only to fall pregnant, but to hold that pregnancy and continue to hold that pregnancy. And, you know, when it comes to progesterone, there's lots of different things that can influence your ability to make it and make enough. But one of the most powerful influences over that is actually stress. And again, that's why it's a really good idea to have this intentional time around preparing, because in my experience, often when we're able to get in that mindset of I am getting ready for conception, you know, I'm making my body feel safe, I'm doing my best to decrease the stressors in my life that are within my control, and also restoring any nutrient deficiencies, or just maximizing your nutrient dense foods, it's only going to have a positive effect on progesterone, which is going to have a positive effect on your ability to actually hold that pregnancy, and for it to you know, be something that really supports you through conception and also through the first trimester. And there are lots of tools in the natural medicine toolkit beyond just what I've mentioned there that are able to support progesterone production. And, you know, depending on you as an individual and where your current progesterone is at, and also how many of the other foundations you're doing and doing well, would influence often, I would say, our decision around how much extra support do we need to put in there. But I would say one undoubtable thing that everyone can benefit from and that would positively affect everyone's progesterone is really learning to manage stress better and not apologizing for it, you know, in terms of actually making self-care a priority in 2024, in whatever way that looks like for you. And it may not be perfect, and it's not to say that you have to avoid ever feeling stressed, because I don't think that's realistic, but just actually thinking about self-care being part of your holistic health, which might sound really obvious when I'm saying it out loud. And I also see how often it's dismissed in place of only focusing, for example, on what you're eating, which is beautiful. And as you know, people who speak about nutrition and are constantly talking about the power of food as medicine, you know, you can't put all your eggs in one basket. You really do have to look at health holistically and remember the power of all these other things that we're sharing, that they are not just, you know, side dishes to the main thing. They're actually really potent, powerful things. And I often find in clinical practice and for myself as well, the thing that we're resisting the most is usually the thing that's going to make the biggest difference to us. So if you're someone who's like, oh, I eat so well, I exercise, and you know, I don't know why I'm still not feeling amazing, or I don't know what else I can do, then, you know, often they're the people who need to slow down, need to like turn inward, need to do put a little bit more emphasis and time into the self-care side of things, or sleep or something to that nature. So just really wanted to mention that. Following on from that, I guess moving into other things that are super important, and this is not an exhaustive list, but more just to highlight the different areas for you all where you have influence over your fertility, is really the endometrial lining. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about that, Ames?
Yeah. So again, I feel like I'm loving we're having this conversation because I feel like for women, it feels so much feels out of our control, you know, in terms of falling pregnant, our fertility. It feels like some sort of mysterious, magical thing that when all the elements align happens. But the truth is there's so much of it that we can influence for the better. And this is regardless of whether you're looking to conceive naturally or you're looking at some sort of assisted techniques, whatever that might be. It is still equally important to be looking at and supporting all of these aspects. And one of them is actually making sure that your endometrium quality and volume and the character of it is conducive to conceiving. So what do I mean by that? So if you are producing sufficient levels of FSH and the follicle is responding with estrogen, you should be able to create a sufficient endometrial lining to support the initial fertilized egg. So it takes about 5 or 6 weeks for the placenta to sort of be created and to actually engage the mother's circulation. And so for 5 or 6 weeks, that little egg is being nourished by the nutrients in the egg sac and then the nutrients in the endometrial lining. So if you have quite light periods, if your blood is quite pale or watery, or you're not bleeding for very long, they would all be indications that your endometrial lining needs some work. And there's lots of reasons that, you know, maybe your endometrium isn't flourishing right now. And that's obviously where working with a practitioner can really help. But the second part of that is to do with making sure it's a welcoming environment and not a hostile environment. Now, this has to do with the immune system and whether or not it's currently programmed for homeostasis or not. So, for example, secretory IgA is an anti-inflammatory immunoglobulin that we secrete across all mucous membranes. That can drop for lots of reasons: stress, you know, not eating enough, zinc deficiency, a major infection, for example, and insufficient levels of secretory IgA are associated with immune-mediated miscarriage. And it's actually fairly simple to address low secretory IgA and reduce the inflammation in the reproductive system. But we also want to make sure there aren't any subclinical or even overt infections, but subclinical infections or any dysbiosis. I know we talk a lot about gut dysbiosis, SIBO, SIFO, you know, bacterial overgrowth or insufficient microbiome. Every single organ of ours actually has a microbiome, including the cerebrospinal fluid, actually, where we're learning more and more about some of these less researched areas like the microbiome and our orbital socket for our tears. And our reproductive system has its own microbiome too. Of course, we talk about the vaginal microbiome a lot, but it extends all the way through into the uterus. And so we want to make sure if there's any local inflammation of any sort, whether it's being systemically driven or it's not, that needs to be addressed. If there are infections at play that are increasing, you know, for example, natural killer cells, an increased level of natural killer cells in the uterus can also induce miscarriage. If you've got autoimmune stuff going on, obviously that should be addressed as well. And if there is any sort of insufficiencies in the microflora of your reproductive system, again, that's something else that can be addressed as well. Just to really, I think as would-be parents, you see preparing the nursery, buying the cute cot, getting the cute decals on the wall, all the baby clothes. You're preparing the home for the baby when they arrive, but its first home, which is inside your body, also might need a little bit of TLC. And that's definitely something I wouldn't overlook either.
Yeah, I love that. And also, like, just the simple thing of like blood flow and energy flow to that area and circulation, which, you know, there are, I know sometimes you can hear us speak and these things can sound really complex, and in one way they are, but it's also things that your body just innately knows how to do. It's more about providing your body with the resources to enable it to do exactly what it's born to do. So, you know, if you're feeling a little bit overwhelmed by hearing some of those explanations or the big words or anything like that, just know that, you know, as much as the intricacies of the processes when we break them down can sound very overwhelming and complicated, when it comes to holistic and natural medicine and supporting our body, it's not always easy, but it can be quite simple. And I guess on that note is, you know, when we're talking about simple but incredibly powerful, we're really speaking about implementing the foundations of preconception care, which largely, no matter who you are, even if you're not under the one-to-one care of a practitioner, because that's maybe not what you can afford right now or just where you're at from an access perspective, you still have a lot of power and a lot of ways that you can influence your own fertility and your own preconception care journey, which is exactly why I created a guide recently, which I've shared on the podcast prior, but I'm just bringing it up again here because it's very relevant to this conversation, which is my guide called Sacred Seeds. And it's just a holistic preconception care guide. And I really crafted this with, I guess, a deep understanding of the synergies between nature and your body and, you know, really diving into just that rich tapestry of how much naturopathic and nutritional foundational medicine can support you on this really special journey. And I really see it and hope that it fills the place of being a little bit of a compass to navigate the landscape of the foundations of preconception care. And if you do end up purchasing the guide or going down that path, you'll see that, you know, in the guide, I've broken down some of the most common questions that I've been getting for years in clinical practice when it comes to what to do, what to eat, what to not eat, what to take, what's important, what's not, because I'm really also very acutely aware of how much information there is out there. And I think sometimes trying to source your information from 10 billion different places and 10 billion different people over an expertly put together guide that is a bit of a one-stop shop for those foundations. I think that, you know, real panicked, scattered way of gathering information can actually end up being detrimental. So I guess my solution to that for those that weren't ready or didn't need to do one-to-one work, but really were keen to get started, is to create this guide. So if you want to actually check out the details of what's included, just jump on over to the link in my Instagram bio, or you're welcome to just go straight to my website and you can navigate there as well. But it's really designed to be an affordable way to get a lot of the foundational knowledge and support that you need in this journey, and to also remember, I think, I guess, as a bit of a last input from me, that every step that you do still counts. So for anyone hanging on to our words around, well, if you have got 2 years, that'd be amazing. And if you can do all these different pieces, that'd be amazing. It doesn't mean that not doing the optimal thing has no influence. In fact, it's the opposite. As I said, every single little thing you do has an impact. And the more that you're able to layer things on top of each other, of course, you get accumulational benefit there. But never let, you know, the little things you can do, like don't kind of see it as all or nothing, because it's just really not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think I'll leave it there. I think I've had a passionate enough rant on preconception care. Is there any last minute things you wanted to add, Ames?
I'll just say, look, our bodies want us to survive, and our bodies want us to reproduce and the human race to survive. And the issue becomes when those two things end up in conflict. So not enough food, too much stress, and all of the things that we've talked about at great length today. And so please know that your body wants the same thing you do. If you are looking to conceive, your ovaries each month are doing their very best, and by giving them the right support and making sure that your body feels safe, you dramatically increase the chances of falling pregnant more quickly, having a healthy baby, having an enjoyable pregnancy, having a healthy child, and generally having an easier time of motherhood. And every little thing that you do, for however short or long that you do it, adds up. So whatever you can do, just do your best. And with the time that you have and with the guidance of Nat's preconception guide, and you're already in a better position than you were yesterday.
I love it. Well, I feel like that is a beautiful place to end this conversation. I hope that you've gotten a lot out of it. Please share with anyone who you know is on this journey or thinking about going on this journey. I really think it's so good to know how much power we have, and women supporting women and sharing this information far and wide is one of the best ways that we can gift back to each other and as a collective. So we will be with you again next week. But until then, we hope you are all well, and we'll speak to you soon.
Women friends.